question of integrity testing, I think one of the major issues the committee had in the past and going forward as well is that we must have the assurance that the top management and the top leadership team subscribe to the highest qualities of ethics. And just to indicate the indication of your plans, you know, just very short in terms of integrity testing. Then the whole issue also of corruption in SAPS. Now you're coming from the banking sector, and maybe just to ask other jurisdictions elsewhere, the question of rotation of members. You know, members can be for 25 years, 20 years member of linked to a certain station. And the question is the link to gangs, the whole question now of the firearms problem, the firearms registry. Shouldn't we maybe think anew? Rotation of members and even staff out of provinces to ensure that we, you know, just maybe your views on that. Then there was an issue raised by Sapu, and if you just can clarify that, I think it's the solidarity case that was brought, the captains and the colonels. Now, it's 4 years, I think, that that issue is on the table in terms of the levels of remuneration. Just to get the status report, is there any progress with regard to that? And then I think there was a report this morning as well, again, in the Cape Times of femicide in the Western Cape. And it's a big issue. I think you also referred to that, you know, how can we improve the morale of members looking at issues dealing with pressure and stress. Maybe just to get a feel from your side about any new initiatives to ensure that if there is warning signs, especially with the new layer of the deputy station commander, are we going to be able to trace or detect those stress signals? Because if we add those additional management levels, of course we must address those issues of morale as well. Those are Ms. Skola Barnard and then Ms. Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to know if there's been any move for many years. Certainly I have, and I think many other members of the committee were very keen to see mandatory psychological debriefing after any firearm incident with an officer or a particularly gruesome cleanup. They've had issues with dismembered babies, etc., and then they go straight back to work. And there does seem to be a definite correlation between those activities, the lack of psychological debriefing, and family murders by SAPS members, which is sadly hits the headlines far too often, and suicides. So I want to know if there's any move. Of course, the whole macho ethos within the SAPS frequently prevents members. They also fear that if there's anything about having had psychological debriefing on their file, that they're not promoted. That automatically precludes any issue of promotion. Of course, if it was an order from yourselves that they must undergo psychological debriefing, it would no longer be an issue because everyone would have to do it. I know there are very few members, qualified members, actually on that staff anymore, but certainly with private medical aid it can be undertaken. So I'm very interested to see if there have been any steps taken in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is twofold. What happened to the note firearms found by SAPS, and where did they come from? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. That's all the questions then, and over to the National Commission. After that, we will go to the brief.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question you raised is about the top 1,500 and the issues related to what we are doing to ensure that there's integrity testing and integrity assurance. What we started doing, because I think at the JCPS plus as well as ministers in that environment, there was a decision that we go on a very deliberate vetting process. The very first lot that is almost complete. We started with all SMS, and that we don't do internally. It is done by SSA to remove all conflict, all conflicts in terms of vetting. Dr. Zulu, who's next to me, we have actually enhanced the vetting unit by almost an additional 80 staff members who went for special training, and we have started looking at the other levels of management. The next one would be the level below the SMS, and the strategic areas such as your procurement environment. So we've identified a few strategic areas to start with. The progress is gaining traction, and we do hope that over time we will be able to complete this process speedily to cover the entire leadership. The top 1,500 is also a priority, and I'm sure she can also aid wherever she adds, because in the last NMF she was also showing us her plan in terms of the accelerated program for dealing with vetting. The ideal really is to get everybody vetted, but I can also say now our recruitment process does exactly that. We vet everybody that we recruit, even the new recruits that are going for training that we're screening. We vet it. We have a system called GEX that we're also using to do additional testing of the certain qualities that we're looking for, criminality, deaths, those type of things. So we look at a number of things. So that process is highly accelerated, and everybody we employ goes through those. And if your process has not been finished, we would issue an appointment letter that's subject to the incident. If it doesn't come through, we then have to reverse whatever we've had. And then we've also gone further to issue, given some of the backlog issues that were there when we came in. On the 29th of May in 2013, we issued a circular instruction where we're requiring people to voluntarily declare if there are any ongoing cases that we may not have been aware of at the point of coming in. So that process also is assisting us to deal with those type of issues. And at any point when a person is being promoted, there's also a standard HR process where those declarations have to be made. And if you don't declare, you know, and we discover, then it shows that you have lied, so we will have to intervene differently. That includes also issues of qualification, because people should submit their certificates. If the process in the past has not been followed, we do still ask when we promote to say, again, confirm that you have the qualifications that you've declared in whatever. So, and I think this is why you'd read about some of the stories on qualifications in the press. The issues of corruption and the rotation chair that you're talking about, we've started looking at it in particular areas. Areas such as General Mawela's environment, where we talk about borders. Areas such as the airport, the port, we're looking at it. And some of the remote posts and stations where it is not easy for one to spend their whole life there, up at the border there. So we're looking at bringing in people for shorter periods and rotating so that they can have the opportunity to advance their career as well as build their lives. We do a mixture of old and young entries and all that. But it's a strategy that will be presented to us because we want to look at it comprehensively. Currently, we're just targeting particular areas. I know General Mawela is working on a strategy for the airport because it's a serious high-risk area. It is easy to develop conflict, so we want to deal with those type of environments in that similar fashion. General Skete will assist me. The issue of the captains and colonels is still pending and hanging. And some of those, what I call the sins of the forefathers, but if they come with the territory, we will continue to deal with it and we will report further progress. Not much has been achieved in that area. The issue of femicide, like I said yesterday, with the issue of suicides and all those type of things, remain top of our minds. What I can share with the committee is that it is also being focused upon as part of our employee health and well-being turnaround strategy. We are also looking, we are engaging with Polmed to look at what we would call a mixed model, because some of the services, some people may require absolute and complete privacy. So the mixed model would ensure that we have our own internal offering using our EHW practitioners, but also, you know, we will look at engaging other external practitioners where members can go in their own privacy at their own time to be able to get the level of assistance that they require. But in such instances where there's femicide, our employee health and well-being environment does actually reach out a lot to go there. But also to mention that indeed, as you're saying, the part of the roles of the deputy station commander would be those type of issues to say, what are we observing in these members? How are we intervening? It is happening right now, but I think we can have more intensity when we have a focused person, where we would remove, for instance, the gun. When we start seeing that there are those type of problems, we would remove the gun, send the member to counseling, and it's only after a certain evaluation that the gun will be taken back. We could do more, that I must say, and we take note of that concern also. The issue of mandatory psychological briefing we've spoken about, I think Honorable Diana Polabarak may not have been there on that first day, because General Bekele has also added even new indicators. We're going to measure that to ensure that people who've been exposed to those all those traumatic type crime scene management and where they've been in ordeals that requires that we take care of them, we actually have included new indicators to deal with it. The new firearms, the investigation is on course. Those guns have been taken for ballistic testing. We will be waiting for reports to be able to just check the migration of those guns. Where do they come from? Do they come from some of our stores? Do they come from wherever that process is taking place? We were just happy as the police that our crime intelligence could assist us with information that led us to that cash list. And I think it is leading to other processes that are beneficial to this country, because we'll be able to have probably more arrests and understand the migration of those as well as the syndicate behind that. So we would be able, when the investigation progresses, to shed more light in that area.
So just to add to 2 points, yes, solidarity aspect is about the promotions of the lieutenants, captains and the majors that currently is on the court row. We have also tried to enhance the hearing of that matter by means of a letter to justice, to the courts, in order to say it's of the utmost importance. I think I should stay with that in a clinical manner, and the matter is funded. Should we get a go-ahead, can be implemented immediately. I think those are the two important points. And then also with regard to the compulsory debriefing scenario, in the benefit design of Polmed as well, we've provided better benefits in your composition of your design for things such as visiting psychologists and psychiatrists. It's not a question of the provisions do not exist, they do exist. It's to get the people to participate in a more intensified manner, so that once you have had a trauma in your work, to get that person to go and see. And the privacy aspect is obviously very important, as the National Commissioner indicated, taking that into account, you know, how the challenge is to get that person to go and see that independent, private, autonomous practitioner someplace, and not necessarily a police psychologist or psychiatrist for that matter. So the provision is there, it's just a compulsory nature, I think, that must be attended to in the manner that it is allowed by corporate privacy arrangements. But I just wanted to come from the provision side. I think it is there.
But maybe just to close off, to say, at the recent Board of Commissioners meeting, which happened just this week, one of the things that we discussed quite intensely is promoting awareness of employee benefits to our police, because it's a little bit of a foreign environment. Issues around pensions, issues around this medical aid and some of the offerings that are there. And we've agreed that we'd look at structured roadshows to engage, to talk, to educate, so that members can go and use those benefits. And this was prompted by the fact that there is a full misinterpretation of what the previous Minister of Finance had announced in terms of pensions. We are starting to see members resigning to take their money because they've been told that when you retire, you will not have the pension. They totally misunderstand. So we're wanting to engage together with the GEPF to go out and talk. So in that, we'll also add packages such as the what medical aid can offer in addition to those other things. The last one, Chairperson, this case that General is talking about has caused us quite a lot of pain, because we announced to our members their promotion. Some of them even started ordering their ranks, and the unions came and stopped it, and it is completely unfair. I recall when we went to bury one of the members that was killed at Klapmuts, I actually said to his wife that I would have been honored to address him as a captain, but I couldn't address him as a captain because of the delay that has been caused in court by unions for some reasons that are just beyond the comprehension of some of us, because I think it is in the interest of members to be promoted when that is due. Some of the things are very deadening to the soul. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that information. We're going to go to the briefing, but just one request. We will organize it in August with the committee section to have a special briefing on the firearm registry, the question of the firearms that was not destroyed, the whole issue there, and maybe the task team that's dealing with that. It's a big concern for us as a committee, that the firearms issue that has been on the agenda of this committee in the previous terms, you know, it's a concern for us. It must be dealt with as a matter of urgency. So in August we will have a special briefing on that, the progress with the investigation, steps, and maybe to clean up that registry for once and for all. So we will organize that. Right, thanks for that. Then we will go to the National Commissioner and the team for the briefing on the crime intelligence.
Thank you, Chairperson. I take this opportunity on behalf of the police to present Program 4, our crime intelligence. I shall introduce the program. General Skeeter will talk about the financial estimates for the program. General Zulu will walk us through the targets for the program. As I introduce this program, Chairperson, let me first and foremost say it is one of the areas that have raised its sulfur within the police over time. As the leadership of the South African Police Service, we took our time to ensure that we push stability in this environment. First, by purifying the structure, separating it from the protection services, and that in itself has assisted us quite a lot to journey along the stabilization that was seen to start to emerge. We've also focused on ensuring that we fill the vacancies that were there so that we can get people starting to work. We have centralized the structure in a, almost like the leader taking responsibility for CI throughout the provinces, whilst the people in the provinces are serving the provincial commissioners in a similar fashion as we spoke of POP yesterday, and that in itself has also assisted. We have appointed almost 80 to 90% of the provincial heads, which is very helpful. And at the national office, we are also sitting at about 70%. The remaining areas are where we're still having legal disputes that are pending. I must say we've seen improvement also in terms of our financial performance and governance. When I joined the police in 2012, there were problems in terms of financial reports on the COVID side. I'm glad to report that when I looked at the reports that we're receiving now, we have overcome those challenges. So I introduced this program at a point where I'm saying we're seeing progress, we're seeing stability. You would note that if one of the things we were dealing with were reputation, and issues that were sitting in the press every day. We've managed really to get reports that are coming from CI being not petty, but rather operational successes that are coming from this environment. And that in itself is showing that the stability that we're seeking to achieve is realizing. Chairperson, the purpose of this environment, having said those opening remarks, is to manage crime intelligence, analyze crime information, provide technical support for investigations and crime prevention operations. To do so, our strategic objective is to gather, to correlate, to coordinate, as well as to analyze intelligence that supports our intelligence-led policing philosophy. The program comprises of two sub-programs. That's crime intelligence operations, intelligence and information management. Let me also indicate that this is part of the intelligence program. There's a whole COVID part which we report to the JSCI on, which has got its own strategic sub-program, its objectives, its budget, which is allocated differently that we're not reporting on here. So this is the above-the-level part of our crime intelligence. I shall then ask General Sketchers to deal with the finances for the OVET part of our intelligence.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a clinical slide that we, the members of this House, have in front of them. As the National Commission indicated, two sub-programs, crime intelligence operations, and then also intelligence and information management, both or respectively to the value of 1.214 billion and 1.666 billion, the two sub-programs, all in all 2.880 billion. For crime intelligence on the OVET side, may I just indicate that compensation in this regard is the biggest portion by far. If you take the red book and you calculate it, it's approximately 89% of the 2.880 billion is compensation of nature, the compensation aspect. Then the other part, which is very important also here, they've got all those people drive operational expenditures, and therefore your associated costs with that compensation part is fuel, oil, travel, and then also some vehicles in this regard. The COVID part is not part of the vote pulleys, it's a separate part, but should be viewed when one look at the CI outputs as also contributing to a large output part in this regard, but the reporting side is therefore to a different portfolio committee. All in all then, compensation, labor intensive, human resource intensive, the nature of this intelligence function, and the human resource nature then also drives your operational expenditures, in terms of fuel, oil, and travel. That is in essence, without going into elements and whatever, what the sub-programs contain of in this regard. Then over to the relevant line functionaries to present the performance indicators. Thank you, sir.
Dr. Zulu General, take over.
Thank you, General. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, members of Parliament, colleagues, good morning. I'll be presenting the program form, which is crime intelligence, which is already the national community has alluded to say it's got two sub-programs. One which is a crime intelligence operation, and the other one is looking on the intelligence information. So the first strategic objective for Program 4 is to gather, correlate, and coordinate and analyze intelligence, which has got the first strategic priority, which is to provide crime intelligence products to support crime prevention and investigation of crime. So it's where we conduct operations to support all the operational units in terms of addressing crime, whether at a station level, cluster level, provincial, and at a national level. Our target for 2014-15 is to conduct 32,507 operations in order to support all operational units. And the second strategic objective for crime intelligence is under crime information operation is to institute counterintelligence measures. Here we are looking at conducting physical security threat assessments. Here we are getting the request where we are requested to go and conduct the threat assessments in terms of different, it can be buildings, it can be the houses, it can be anything that where the members or the people of South Africa, they need us to go and conduct the threat assessments and to counter in terms of the threats that can be posed in that particular physical place. So here we are expected to say when we receive the request, we have to attend to that. And our target is 100% target. We want to achieve 100% in terms of this. And then the third strategic objective is to facilitate international capability for reducing transnational crime. This is the new, strategic objective that we have added. Previously, we were not reporting on this one, but we've added this one. It's where we are focusing mainly on the functioning of the Interpol, being the contributory organ in terms of addressing the transnational crime and being able to assist other international law enforcement agencies to reduce crime, and also they are assisting us also to arrest and also to address crime of the people who have been committed crime in our country and they left it at the country. So they assist us also in terms of extradition in those countries. And then our performance indicator, the first one is the percentage of Interpol cases files closed. So as we'll be receiving the files that will be directed to Interpol, we are saying that at least out of those files that we'll be receiving, at least 70% of those files, they should be
closed in the target of 2014-2015. Currently, we are under 2012-15, we're standing at 65. Now we're moving to 70. And then the second performance indicator there is the percentage of arrest of unidentified transnational crime suspect facilitated. Here we are standing at 42, and we want to move to 55 here, which is where we are assisting with an arrest other than the suspect is in our country and is for another country, or our suspect is in another country, we want you to bring it back to their country. So this is the new indicator or the strategic priority that we've added. And the second sub-program, intelligence and information management, our first strategic objective there is to gather, correlate, coordinate, and analyze intelligence. In this sub-program, we're focusing more on the information and intelligence management, of which on the other one, we were focusing more on conducting the operation. Then the first strategic operations here is to provide intelligence products to support crime prevention and investigation of crime. By doing so, we'll be providing such like operational analysis report, profiles, intelligence analysis reports, communication analysis, communication interception analysis, station cluster and crime threats analysis report. This we are giving to our investigators, we are giving to our support units, we are also giving to our operational units in any case when they need this particular profile. So we are servicing the whole country in terms of that. And some of them of these reports we are not just only doing for the South African Police Service, we are also doing it for other governments. They will ask also some of these, especially when they are doing their own vetting, when also they are asking to enlist the service provider to provide certain functions. We also produce those reports to mitigate the threats in terms of production of the service in that particular department. So that's why we've got a huge number of reports that being produced in this particular field. And then our target for 2014-2015 is 261,193. So, and then the second strategic priority in terms of the strategic objective number one is the provision of the intelligence report to SAPS management, where we started to say in each and every quarter we want to come up with the intelligence reports that will provide a strategic direction in terms of the intelligence to the management of SAPS to say this is a threat, this is what we can do, you can do as an organization. We'll be now sensitizing, guiding the organization in terms of, as intelligence community, what do we see as a threat in the country and how can it be mitigated, and what operational units can do in order to assist to try and resolve that particular identified the problems. And then we are saying that we are going to produce for our target for 2014-2015. And then the second strategic objective is to supply crime intelligence rating to National Strategic Intelligence, to NICOC. As part of intelligence community, we are part of the NICOC. And then we are saying that NICOC also, we need to sensitize the NICOC of all the strategic intelligence issues that needs to be coordinated by all intelligence communities in terms of addressing them. So we are saying that our target for 2014-15 is going to be 6 intelligence reports. Previously we've been doing this, but it was not part of the of our reporting part. So we have even introduced it as a new indicator. So we'll be producing 6 strategic intelligence reports in order also to assist and guide the country in terms of maintaining and making sure that we are having a proper and intelligence communicated information. This is the last slide in terms of of our planning. Maybe I will add, as General was requesting that requested that maybe I must add in terms of the integrity and the rating on those issues. In terms of vetting, the members of the Conspiratorial Committee will, and the members of the Parliament will remember that we identified the critical units or the divisions and the positions where we need to have vetting. And part of this was crime intelligence, supply chain management, DPCI, and then we also added internal audit, and the PSS is part of those units. And also now we've added the personnel management, those who are dealing with the service termination, and also we've added the firearm control, the people who are working in the firearm office. So those are the critical vetting issues that we'll be attending to. And then again, when we were doing this thing as part of addressing the backlog, we came up with a turnaround strategy in terms of dealing the backlog, which I think it's been our problem for quite some time. So when we do the analysis in terms of vetting, we find that there were too much overclassification in terms of vetting in some of the instances, where you'll find that because I'm a general in the office, I'm the divisional commissioner, then I will expect the cleaner in my office to have a top security clearance, which is a very long process to obtain. Instead of a person getting just that confidentially security clearance. So now we've worked in a process to say, we reduce this overclassification where you find a person supposed to get a confidentiality classification, then he gets a top secret clearance classification. And by doing so, it's helping us now because it's reducing the number now of the top secret security clearance that we have to produce. And they will be now we'll be focusing on the key functions, all the key functions where this particular security clearances are requested. And we also look at the issue of to say, where is the current backlog lying? We find that the current backlog is not in the polygraphy, is not in the investigation, but it's in the evaluation. And then when we find that in the evaluation, we find in the evaluation that we don't have enough capacity in that particular environment in the evaluation. So what we have done, we said we are going to start this, to say we've started the task team, as I'm speaking again, they're coming on Monday, they're sitting there. We collect all the backlogs of the the security clearance that has been finalized, which now we're just waiting for them to be evaluated so that they can set for the evaluation committee. So this task team now, you get your expert from 9 provinces and the head office, and they sit and they evaluate this backlog. And then by doing so, that 2,000 that we are having, within a week, you can finalize it. So it's going to help us again a lot to push where we find that the backlog is almost where it is lying. And some of the issues also that we've addressed, which we find that it's a problem, is the quality control systems. We find that in the provinces, there was no quality control system. So when they are submitting, you find that there are so many things that then the file will move up and down because you forgot to put this, you forgot to put this. This one was supposed to be done. So we've established the desk that we now, which will be doing the quality control system at different levels to reduce also this backlog where you find that the document, maybe the statement, we're supposed to produce a three-month statement, and instead of that, now it's already expired, but no one checked that they provided a three-month bank statement, which is expired. So this quality control system, they'll be helping us in terms of that. And also we are working in terms of moving now to the e-vetting system. The e-vetting system is where we are saying that we know that currently with our staff, we are utilizing the e-filing. It's something like that what you want to do because it's easy to manage. What we are doing currently, we are filling in the form, and after filling in the form, someone must go and take it manually, and then someone must punch. And sometimes it's even difficult to read the handwriting of the person. And again, it's generating on the time that is supposed to be utilized in terms of the investigation. So by introducing this assistance by our TSM,
we are able now, TMS, we are able now to say that this is going to help us. We are really at a high level in terms of introducing the e-voting system. So these are the part of the issues that we'll be addressing in a strategy, turning around this backlog that has been quite some time within crime intelligence in terms of issuing the voting certificate. I think that is the National Commissioner. I think maybe National Commissioner already alluded that some of the issues, although they are not being tabled here, but we are also reporting on the Joint Standing Committee of Intelligence, where also we've got some of our key performance areas or our strategic objectives where we are reporting on that committee. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, General.
Just to say in closing, I must say also one of the issues that one should highlight is the heightened cooperation between the intelligence agencies of the country, which is also highly beneficial to our delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Generals, for your presentation. I will take questions. I've got two questions, and then we'll start with Ms. Cola Barnard around the table and at the back. The first issue is the question of corporate governance, and just to get the indication from the National Commissioner, we appreciate the steps that we've taken to clean up the area that needs clean up. We appreciate that. But the question I have is that portfolio is currently in your office. Is it sustainable over the medium to long term? In terms of your strategic, I can understand for the current situation, of course, if it's a crisis situation, the accounting officer must deal with it, clean the house, get new people, and do it. But is it over the long term sustainable? Then the question again of financial controls. It's no secret it was reported in the newspapers about the problem with financial control and so on. I just wanted to know, in terms of the financial control and the CFO for that fund, can we get insurance that there is now somebody, a CFO, like General Skitter was the CFO of police, in place to ensure that the financial controls, the qualified person, that insurance, we'll appreciate that. Then, let's start. We'll take about three or four, and then we'll take a second round. Honourable Cola Barnard.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let's start with basically the elephant in the room, the Mdluli matter. He's now sat at home for about 2 years, I think, on full pay. And last I heard, the charges have now been, the ones that were so curiously dropped have now been reinstated. In June 2010, I was calling for answers from this management team about Richard Mdluli. So that's 4 years ago this issue started. What is the status today? Is he still a full member, on full salary, on full everything? Are we all sitting waiting for charges again for years and years? I don't know. Please fill us in there. And then what is the status of the first acting head of crime intelligence? He was suspended. Obviously, it did seem at the time it was as though he had been suspended because of the case against the National Police Commissioner and the Provincial Police Commissioner of the Western Cape. Where is he? What is his status? There was reference to vetting. Now, that situation at last seems to be at a stage of being efficiently managed, I hope. It's been disastrous. I mean, the last acting head, Richard Mdluli, didn't have clearance at all as the head of crime intelligence. Neither did his replacement. May I ask if the current general has top secret clearance, and also the provincial heads, because previously none of the provincial heads had any security clearance. So that was a major issue. It does seem like it's being dealt with finally, but please just assure us that it is actually and has been. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cola Barnard. Mr. Mabedi.
Thanks very much, Chair. Let me just offer my apologies for my slightly late arrival this morning. Just a comment and a question. The comment is, if you'll indulge me as a new member, I imagine it is something that has been mentioned before in relation to crime intelligence, but just to say it for myself, is there's an old anecdote about Mahatma Gandhi having a conversation with the Viceroy of India during the British Empire, and what the Viceroy was boasting about how the sun never sets on the British Empire, to which Mahatma Gandhi responded, "That's because God does not trust the British in the dark." And so in relation to the covert operations, is just to say, I understand the sensitivity of the operational area, but it can be very easily abused, as my colleague Honorable Court of Honor mentioned. And so that is something that's just always going to be top of mind. My question is, I had a meeting with a member of the public last Wednesday, who mentioned he and his family live in Malkbosstrand, up on the west coast, and he was saying there's been a very noticeable and remarkable increase in break-ins, carjackings, and home robberies. And they suspect it is linked to an emerging drug syndicate that's based slightly further north towards Malmesbury area, but the footprints of the syndicate is extending south towards Malkbosstrand. And I'm very pleased to see General Jacobs here, because I know him from my time in the Western Cape governments, so hopefully that can be very easily taken up. But, so I would like to say, in terms of one of the intelligence products and the investigations, can the Malkbosstrand trends in the increase in property crimes linked to organized crime and the role of crime intelligence please be taken up? Thank you.
Thanks for that question. Other members? Honourable Malabati.
Thank you, Chairperson. The presenter spoke about when she was speaking about vetting. We spoke of over classification and what the other one is. I think it's an ordinary one. Where do you draw the line to say this one is over for the over classification before, and so on? My other question is, yes, you said you have in place a strategy to work smarter in your team. What is the situation now? And the other thing that I want to know is, in an application, can this applicant be turned down because of discrepancies that are beyond his or her control, say, of your own making? Thank you.
We will take those and then the second round, National Commissioner.
Chairperson, thank you for the questions that have been posed to us. You started off by dealing with issues of corporate governance in terms of the CI function on the medium to long term. Indeed, I have said when I announced the reorganization and reallocation of functions in September last year, that given the challenges that are sitting in this environment, it was necessary for me as a leader to incubate that process and ensure that we clean the environment. Indeed, in the future, when I have finished cleaning this process, which is a long journey, and ensuring that I take primary responsibility and accountability to this nation to ensure that this function does what it's supposed to do, it will probably be migrated to join other policing functions, because ordinarily crime intelligence is a policing function. But for now, I am still on the journey of ensuring that this function does what it's supposed to be doing, and I'm not in a position to even give a time frame in this regard. Regarding financial controls, As I've said, indeed, if I look at our above-the-line finances, are in good hands, and that's what we've been reporting the plan for the year. I can also comfortably say, as I've said earlier on, that even in the COVID space, those are in good hands. You would recall in that space that the CFO, we were held by disciplinary-related issues. That matter has been dealt with, has been closed. We are advertising that position, and I'm sure we will be finalizing an appointment in that space very soon. The acting role is also doing very well, and this is why we are able to be comfortable in terms of where we are going. So that space, I think when we go to the JSCI, would almost be close to concluding that process. The next question that was asked from Honourable Member Barnett was about the matters of General Mbidi, which have been pending for quite some time. First, let me pose the dependencies that sit in that space, because it is not a matter that is solitarily handled by ourselves. Once matters are in court, all of us have to comply. You would be aware that as I talk now, there are new charges that have been posed. You would also be aware that there were certain pending issues that were holding our hands, where we could not actually navigate. We had to wait for what was happening in the court. Also, you'd be aware that prior to my coming to the organization, there were also disciplinary charges that were formulated, one sitting set. There was one sitting. The matter was postponed sine die, but those dependencies with the court held those in abeyance. So currently we would have to go back to that space and look at the charges that have been pending and see how we take those processes forward, and always, of course, being cautious with their dependencies, with what the courts are prescribing. We hope that this matter will come to an end. It is in the basket of issues that we are dealing with. The issue of Major General Ngobo, as I mentioned earlier on, is the issue relating to disclosure, relating to qualification. There is currently a hearing taking place, and it's been on for some time, but I'm sure we'll get to finality on that matter, to look at the non-disclosure issues that have been dealt with in that hearing. On vetting, I think General Zulu will touch on whatever else is outstanding, but I must say we are doing a lot to deal with vetting issues, and as I've said, Chairperson, currently all appointments, we make sure that when we appoint, people are vetted. Before I appointed Tazulu, I had to make sure that she is vetted, she possessed the necessary certificate. If she didn't, I would have had a conditional appointment, which would be dependent on the outcome of the vetting. So we do express vetting in circumstances such as those. So even all the other appointments that we've had in CI now have been subjected to the same rigor and condition. Honorable Mbele, you raised an issue, first a comment, about abuse of COVID operations. I think in a similar fashion that we're talking about our rigor for governance processes in SAPS,
We take that very seriously. And so does the committee that we report to. It is as serious and as harsh as yourselves in making sure that we account and we stay the course in terms of the work that we are doing. And not only that, we are also having the Inspector General who has to give us the Inspector General certificate of authenticity to operate. So we are subjected to a lot of oversight even in that space. So I would want to say, I think the infrastructure for oversight that has been set by this government is quite rigorous, and we are working hard to ensure that we comply with those requirements. There's the AG, there's Treasury, there's internal audit, there's the CI Inspectorate. So there are a number of platforms within the COVID environment that ensure that that abuse is mediated. I will ask General Jacobs and General Skeeter to just, not General Skeeter, General Lamour, to comment on the concerns you are raising on the Melkbos Rand syndicate and property crimes that are emerging. I'm sure they'll be able to respond to that. I'll ask General Zulu to talk about the classification, clarify it a little bit better, and again to accentuate the progress we've made in terms of vetting. General Lamour, you can start, and then General Jacobs can support you on the Melkbos Rand issue.
Honourable Chair, thanks very much for the question. What we do in the province is that all stations must identify different groupings, and we deal with the groupings, and at the end of the day it can relate into an organized crime project. So we will follow up. If you can just give me the details of this specific person, that we can follow up that information. And yes, in different areas there are people, house breakers, house robberies, that are involved in the province itself. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Shepherdson. In terms of the over-classification, as the member, Honourable Member of the Particular Committee has asked, in terms of the over-classification, as I've explained, that sometimes you find that you are that top management and you've got a particular cleaner who's working, and you are the one who have to detect whether the person should have a confidential or secret or top security clearance to that member that should be issued. So most of the commanders or the managers, they will say, if I'm having a top security clearance, I'm expecting even the cleaner or the team, the person who's making team, must have the same top security clearance, of which is not, it does not go like that. What we do, we look at the job description. What is the job description of this particular member? And what are the risks carried by this portfolio? Based on the risk carried by the portfolio, we are now assessing to say, is this person really qualifying to have a top security clearance or secret or confidential? So confidential is easy to process it, and then because it's so there are not so many things that, and the interviews and other things that we have to do. And then top secret, it's lots and lots of work that we have to do. And only to find that this person is not a risk carrier, but you are doing the whole process of which the person does not carry a risk. That is how we are now working. So even after the commander has said that the messenger or the cleaner there must have a top security clearance, our panel is still going to do the job evaluation of the person, look at the risk that is carried by the portfolio, and then say, this, in fact, this person is supposed to have this particular security clearance certificate. In terms of the situation, unfortunately, we didn't bring the figures in terms of how far away General is. Yeah, we can submit that. But I must say that during the analysis, since we started this, we could see that this is where the job, the backlog has been lying. as we are dealing with the task, the task team, the seasoned evaluators that are evaluating this, we are seeing now the backlog now going down. So, but we don't have currently the figures. In terms of saying that the applicant can an applicant be turned down when applied for the security clearance, the answer is yes. That's why we have to go to polygraphy, to your your investigation, and then we've got this evaluation panel, because you can say something there, and then the polygraph say something, we evaluate, and then we also assess the risk and the threat that is carried by the information that you are providing to us. And then it's when we are declining your insecurity clearance or affirming your security clearance. Thank you.
Just as an example to the honorable member, for instance, General Ngoke did not get clearance. That was one of the other issues.
Thank you very much. We want to wrap up this. I'm going to take one or two hands, the honorable member Chitola and Honorable Coda Barnard. Other members, are they fine?
Thanks, Chair. Only one question. I want to know, because it's a good thing that you may be passionate about good governance, doing the vetting properly and so on, but this may be interfered with by politics. Can you indicate whether in some instances your vetting has been overruled by political heads, negatively or positively? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, just this one. It's actually, we refer to it in our BRR report. When the divisions of crime intelligence and the Presidential Protection Services were moved under the ambit of the National Commissioner, there were concerns by this committee and by the unions. The manner in which the restructuring was announced, there was no consultation with this committee, and there were questions raised about the protocols for the appointments of the Deputy Director Generals, including the adverts for those posts. So we requested at that time, and this is just a reminder, perhaps, that we asked the Commissioner to inform this committee before making such appointments. Do you see that these two entities will remain under yourself as the National Police Commissioner? Will it be moved under other generals? What is the situation at the moment? Because it's caused some disquiet. Thank you.
Any other questions? Right, we close then this part. National Commissioner, for your attention.
Chairperson, let me start off with Honorable Chichonga's question around the political interference. The operations of police is under the guidance of the National Commission. And the National Commission is in charge of the entire service at national and in the province. And unlike the other departments, the Police Act is the National Commission to run the police. In all the appointments and all those issues, I'm the final arbiter for those type of issues. So at no point do such processes get to the minister's office. And I guess it's because of the nature of the function that the Police Act is structured the way it is structured. So there is absolutely no engagement with any political person, platform, office when we deal with our city. It is an operational matter through and through. On the second issue regarding restructuring, First and foremost, I want to say we did not restructure SAP. I came to this portfolio committee. I gave a full presentation which spoke about the reorganization of functions and realignment of functions, and I gave the full reasons why I adopted that process. I was invited by the chairperson to present to this committee, which I did. But also to say again, let us just again remember that the Police Act allows the National Commissioner A to appoint all the 9 commissioners in the provinces in consultation with the premiers, in consultation with the executives. Once we've appointed those commissioners, I then have a responsibility to ensure that I appoint the relevant administrative, tactical, technical, strategic support, which are the divisional commissioners and others at a national level. The same applies to the provincial commissioner in the province. The Police Act also allows me to design the administrative framework of the police in accordance with the strategic requirements of policing in the country. So for that reason, at any given time, the police commissioner shall ensure that they structure the police service in a manner that it helps them to execute the strategies that we presented to you, the targets that we presented to you. So what I have done is fully within my remit. If I was restructuring, indeed I would have gone to the unions, because those agreements in terms of our triple FBC requirement would have required that I do this. I reorganized, and I needed not to consult. And the consultation also at times is not consultation to receive agreement, because the Act gives me the responsibility to ensure that the police service is run. So I want to say, first, I did present to this committee. Secondly, I fulfilled my duties as a national commissioner to reorganize in a manner that it helps us to achieve the targets and the outcomes that you're seeing here. And thirdly, I respect the role of the union. We engage with them in accordance with what we should engage with them. We do not conflate our roles by actually stunting our performance when we are given those powers by the legislation. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much for that. And members, we come now to the end of this interaction with the South African Police Service. We have 3 days with them. We want to thank them for their presentation. I think we've indicated from our side the implementation plans and clarifications we need to produce our report during next week. Going forward as well, we agree, you know, I think what is quite important, the Commission is setting the tone in terms of the strategic direction, and that's the right route in terms of professionalisation of the police. We as a committee, of course, will look very closely at the question of demilitarisation, as indicated in the National Development Plan, how that's playing out. We're going to monitor that quite closely, and also making the police service more professional. We're going to look at that. It's a new portfolio committee. We will have our strategic planning in August. We're going to do things a bit different, I think, than the fourth term, but we're going to look also closely at the different units in the police, not necessarily all the police stations, but we're going to focus very much on all those issues that are burning and on the table. So we want to thank the South African Police Service for the presentation, and we as a committee will look at all the inputs and the reports that we receive next week, and then debate and deliberate on the report next Friday, and then take those issues further in the EPC. So thank you very much to the National Commissioner team for the interaction, and we are looking forward to further interactions during the year. Then, just to indicate to members, we're going to take a 5-minute break. 5 minutes, and then we'll come back to deal with it.
Chair, sorry, will we get just a summary again of those issues that so you can compare notes? Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Very nice. nicely done. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for the hospitality.
Sorry?
Thanks for the hospitality.
Oh.
Mr. Buchmann, in terms of your strategic reflections, would a rather unique station like Cape Town Central, with its unique challenges and functions, would that be of interest to?
Yeah, I think maybe what we would do is maybe to
invite, you know, one of the, for example, we are dealing with 43 courts, 40 record officers. It's, I mean, we have some unique features, and that could be of interest for your strategic concern.
Of course.
You have my card, don't you?
Yeah.
Many thanks.
Safe journey home. All the best.
Have a safe journey home.
I'm going to take a look at the other one.